Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure, and I'll be with you over the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, in part three of a four-part series of conversations with the general manager of St. Peter's Basilica, we learn about crowd management and security changes, plus how to go about reserving a chapel to celebrate Mass in the Basilica. And it's not exactly what you'd think of when you think of modern music. But some experts say, from the Middle Ages to the present day, the Church's very own Gregorian chant is the mama of many modern melodies. If you lived through them, you'll never forget them. The hot spring days following Pope John Paul II's death in April 2005, when millions of pilgrims patiently lined Rome's streets to pay their last respects to the Pope that so many loved. Millions poured through St. Peter's Basilica to mourn the Pope lying in state, and in the years to follow his funeral, even more have quietly queued to pray at his tomb in the Basilica's grottos. Just how does the Vatican manage such enormous crowds, over and above the normal daily flow of tourists and pilgrims? Well, in this, part three of a four-part series of conversations with Cristina Carlostella, general manager of the Fabrica, or Fabrique, of St. Peter's, we look at how security has changed over the last few years and have a tip or two for clergy who'd like to celebrate Mass in the Basilica.
The visitors' flow has been absolutely enormous after John Paul II's death. And that has caused quite a number of preoccupations and worries, because it is the management of crowds which is, I think, one of the major problems that quite a number of administrations have to deal with right now. The Fabrique of St. Peter is not really involved in that aspect. Let me explain this. For the crowds that are walking into the Basilica, it is actually the security bodies of the Italian state and of the Vatican police that actually manages that at the St. Peter Square level.
Let me just explain to our listeners that since 2001, after the September 11th attacks, we who work in the Vatican have gradually seen greater security around the Basilica, around Piazza San Pietro, St. Peter's Square. We, in the last few years, have now been seeing it's been cordoned off with a chain link fence all around the outside of the Basilica. Even the colonnade around the outside of the square have now also been fenced off with metal fences. And you'll find Italian police, in little carts going around the square and providing security around the perimeters, especially of the square. So we have seen these major changes, unfortunately, in the last few years. And people are having to go into the square through metal detectors now as well. So explain, though, actually getting into the Basilica and into the grottos, what do tourists or pilgrims have to face?
Well, once they've passed through the security checks, as I said, managed by the Italian police in St. Peter's Square, they have to leave all their packages or bags in a guardaroba area, which is a cloakroom. And then they can access inside the Basilica. And even in the Vatican grottos, they can go freely into that space once they have passed that security check. Now,
sorry, but is it one line? Because it's been a while since I've had to go through there. It's two lines. One line to get into the basilica and another line to get into the grotto?
No, it's the same. I'm sorry, it is the same. It is the same line. Basically, what happens is that we do have a merge area on the right-hand side of the narthex of the basilica, and that is for visitors or groups coming from the Vatican museums into the basilica. Now, that is an area where we also have a checkpoint, let us say, a small little checkpoint, so that we are sure that visitors coming from the Vatican museums have left all their bags and then can accede into the basilica proper. But besides this other check control in St. Peter's Square, there are no other controls. We do have visitors who would just like to go to the cupola, for example, who would just like to go up and get this extraordinary experience of going up to that height and getting this panorama, this splendid panorama of Rome from the cupola. Now, the cupola is managed by the Fabric of St. Peter. So that is another, let us say, crucial checkpoint. You've got the ticket office to the cupola, and that's where we have some San Pietrini who actually control the tourist flow and the visitors flow to the cupola.
You have to explain the San Pietrini. It means little St. Peter's, but it also has another meaning, doesn't it?
Yeah, San Pietrini is the term that is affiliated to the workmen, that actually, the custodians, let us say, of the basilica, San Pietrini. Now, San Pietrini is also the same term that is used for the cobblestones around Rome. And these are the square little cobblestones that you have all over the pavements, the road pavements in Rome. It's called San Pietrini. So I always joke with our San Pietrini of the Fabrica that I think that the other San Pietrini, that is the road pavement, are terrible, but not our San Pietrini, because our San Pietrini are really, we do have now, I'm not just speaking as the general manager, but really we're very proud of our San Pietrini staff, because they do an excellent job. They run work shifts that are very heavy sometimes, 24-hour, for example, when John Paul II died, those days, which were very, very moving, it was a very moving experience, but we had a work shifts 24-hour round the clock within the basilica because of all those faithful and visitors that were coming to pay their respects to John Paul II. So they really are a fantastic group of men who really dedicate their entire, life to the San Pietro. I mean, they have such a veneration and devotion to St. Peter themselves that it's just really very moving to have such motivated group of people.
Now, they're the ones who are responsible for setting up the altar on the steps outside this basilica when the Pope gives a special mass outside, or for all the events held in St. Peter's Square as well?
Well, there we do also share the responsibility with Governatorato, La Floreria Vaticana, for example. There are quite a number of teams of workmen that, we try to sort of share and help each other out there. But most of the San Pietrini's role and job is the surveillance of the basilica proper, so inside the basilica or at the entrance of the basilica. And they carry out, of course, all the maintenance work. And again, there, for example, in setting up for the liturgies, the mass liturgies within the basilica, you do have a very strong cooperation with these other teams of workmen that are from the Vatican, from the Governatorato. They're managed by the Governatorato. So Governatorato and Fabric of St. Peter very much collaborate very strongly when we have to set up the interior of the basilica for liturgical ceremonies or for other events. But just the custodian aspect, that is just surveilling the inside the basilica, that's up to the San Pietrini and the Fabrica in St. Peter.
And are you also the ones, or they would be the ones, who set up the nativity scene and the big Christmas tree in St. Peter's Square at Christmas time?
No. Actually, the one that's in St. Peter's Square is actually designed and set up by the Governatorato. But, however, there is a competition every year because our San Pietrini have had, by tradition, the task of setting up another creche scene inside the basilica. And with all respect to the creche scenes in St. Peter's Square, I have to say that the creche scenes designed by, especially in recent years, designed by our own San Pietrini is really very, very beautiful. I won't put a comparison there, but I have to say that every year I find myself congratulating our San Pietrini also for the aesthetic level and the loving care that they put in setting up that crush scene inside the basilica. It's usually in the chapel area or the area right after the baptistry, to the left hand side, to the small nave on the left of the inside the basilica.
So we'll tell our listeners, if they're here in Rome at Christmas time, to check that out.
Absolutely, because every year they put an element that's different every year. So I think last year they put a waterfall. A real waterfall, a small little waterfall in the crash scene. And it was very, very beautiful.
Are you in charge in any way for the little individual liturgies that go on, the daily masses in St. Peter's, also the confessions in the various languages?
For the confessions, not really, because you do have the penitenceria of the Vatican that really takes care of that. The management, that is the cleaning, the maintenance of the confessionals, yes, that is up to us. For the daily masses, it's really up to the Vicariato, the Vatican Vicariate Office, that actually runs that. But of course, the Archpriest of the Basilica of St. Peter is also the head, of course, is our Archpriest of the Canons of St. Peter. And so together with that group, the canons, and also the vicariate office, whose headquarters are also here in the headquarters of the Fabrique, we do manage the daily mass liturgies. The one superior who's actually really looks after this area is the delegate of the Fabrique in San Pietro, His Excellency Bishop Lanzani. He is the one who actually looks after the programming together with Cardinal Comastri in the daily mass schedule. Priests who come from all over the world can actually reserve their daily mass in the sacristy directly, or they send us a request. They send to the Fabrica di San Pietro, to the Vicariate office, a request to say mass at a particular altar inside the basilica.
How do they do that? They go on to the Fabrique of St. Peter's from the Vatican website.
Right, exactly. Okay.
My last question then, you've already mentioned some of them, but the challenges that you hope to tackle in the future.
This is a very, very nice question, but also a challenging question. I think really my real concern is that any person from any part of the world, any country in the world, whatever their cultural background is, whatever their religious background is, may come to this site and have such an overall extraordinary experience that, and somehow, either the beauty of this extraordinary site, the spirituality of this extraordinary site, might change something in their life.
Thanks there to Cristina Carlo Stella, General Manager of the Fabrica of St. Peter's. That's the Vatican office responsible for the maintenance and daily care of the Basilica. It's not exactly what you think of when you think of modern music. But some experts say, from the Middle Ages to the present day, the church's very own Gregorian chant is the mama of many modern melodies. Rosario Tronolone sat down with professor and maestro Aurelio Porfiri to talk about his new book, Ad Te Levavi Animam Meam, On the Way to Discovering Gregorian Chant, written together with Professor Nino Albarosa. But what is Gregorian chant anyway?
Gregorian chant is the repertoire that came from Middle Age, and that the only repertoire that the Catholic Church recognized as its own repertoire. It is a monodic repertoire, so it means that is only the melody is only one line. So it is opposite to polyphonic, where there are more lines together. And is a repertoire in Latin, and is a repertoire that is for the purpose of serving the liturgy of the church. There is one big division that is there is the repertoire for the Mass, so the repertoire for the celebration of the Eucharist, and the repertoire for the divine office. And Gregorian chant is really the father and the mother of the Western music. Mm-hmm. So all Western music belong from Gregorian chant.
What was the influence of the Gregorian chant on the polyphony?
Yes, the influence was huge, because polyphony belong from Gregorian chant. At some time in the Middle Age, they start to do experiment, putting other melodic lines above the Gregorian chant. And so developing, we have then all the polyphonic music and all the modern music. So Gregorian chant is really as I told you, really the father and the mother of all the music that we now have.
And the rediscovery of the Gregorian chant was due to whom?
The rediscovery of Gregorian chant was due to a monk, the monk that also was the restored the Abbey of Solesmes, and the name was Prosper Guéranger. And he is really a key figure in the world of Gregorian chant, because he start to rediscover the correct performance and the correct melodic version also of Gregorian chant, because in his time, so we are talking about the 19th century, also the melodic version was corrupted. So he start a movement in a certain way that then also with the contribution, the great contribution of other monks, especially from Solesmes, like Dom Potier, Dom Mocreux, Dom Cardin, Dom Clair, and they give us more insight about what is supposed to be the authentic Gregorian chant melodic version and performance. But the starting of everything is Dom Prosper Guéranger, that he was not a musician, I think he was a liturgist more, but he started this movement in Solesmes that also today is the place for Gregorian chant, and he started this movement that help all the scholars to rediscover the authentic Gregorian chant.
The Gregorian chant uses a peculiar musical language. Is that similar in a way to our modern tonality, major, minor?
We can say that the modern tonality belong to the modes, we call the Gregorian chant, use the ecclesiastical modes that we, and the tonality and the modern tonality, major and minor, is a development of the modal world.
The second part of the volume is instead an anthology of chants, actually, which are examined, and we can also hear them, no, on the CD, which is included with the volume. Which are these songs that you chose, and why did you choose them?
Okay, so I have to say something more about the book. As you can see in the book, as you announced before, there are two authors. One is me, and the other is Professor Albarosa. And Professor Albarosa is really the leading expert in Gregorian chant. I cannot say to be an expert. I obviously know Gregorian chant and I've studied, but he is really an international expert. And so I asked him to collaborate for this project. And when we decide to do a second part with the pieces, he made the proposal of these seven pieces, and these seven pieces that also he has recorded with the choir that Professor Albarosa conduct, Medie Aetatis Sodalicium, that is a wonderful female choir that is really specialized in Gregorian chant. And these pieces are an example from the most easy to the difficult one of Gregorian chant. And what is, I think, interesting to say is that in this book we also explain how works the semiology. That this is the, I think, the important thing. The semiology is the study of the sign that were in the medieval manuscript. And Professor Albarosa is really a leading expert in this. And so in the book we explain especially the same goal notation, that is one of the most important among the other notations. And these pieces in the second part are a sort of progressive introduction in the study of the semiology. In the first part, we explain the meaning of the sign. So we say, like, a Virga is this one, and Torculus is this, and you will find the sign. And in the second part, there is a practical approach on this sign. And so I want to say how much I was really honored that Professor Albarosa collaborate with me for this project, because he is really an academic leader in Gregorian chant.
So let's listen to one of these pieces. Which one would we choose?
And maybe you can choose the Me Expectaverunt, that is one of the complex one, but is very beautiful.
Rosario Tronolone talking there with Professor Aurelio Porfiri, co-author of Ad Te Levavi Animam Meam, which you can find on the internet at edition-music-contact.de. And we'll end today's program with another selection of Gregorian chant from the CD accompanying Professor Porfiri's book. Let's listen.
Thank you.
And that concludes today's program. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining us today. Bye-bye. Laudator Jesus Christus.